I'll let you know next month. He stopped a hand's breadth away, his golden face tight.
I told you once, and I'll tell you again, he said. I am not your enemy.
And I told you once, so I'll tell you again. You're Tamlin's enemy. So I suppose that makes you mine.
Does it?
Free me from my bargain and let's find out.
I can't do that.
Can't? Or won't?
He just extended his hand.
Shall we go?
I nearly lunged for it.
His fingers were cool, sturdy, calloused from weapons I'd never seen on him.
Darkness gobbled us up, and it was instinct to grab him as the world vanished from beneath my feet. Winnowing, indeed. Wind tore at me, and his arm was a warm, heavy weight across my back while we tumbled through realms, Reese snickering at my terror. But then, solid ground, flagstones were under me, then blinding sunshine above, greenery, little birds chirping. I shoved away from him, blinking at the brightness, at the massive oak hunched over us.
An oak at the edge of the formal gardens. Of home.
I made a bolt for the manor house, but Reese grabbed my wrist. His eyes flashed between me and the manor.
Good luck, he crooned.
Get your hand off me. He chuckled, letting go.
I'll see you next month, he said. And before I could spit on him, he vanished.
I found Tamlin in his study, Lucian and two other sentries standing around the map-covered work table. Lucian was the first to turn to where I lurked in the doorway, falling silent mid-sentence. But then Tamlin's head snapped up, and he was racing across the room, so fast that I hardly had time to draw breath before he was crushing me against him. I murmured his name as my throat burned, and then he was holding me at arm's length, scanning me from head to toe.
Are you all right? Are you hurt?
I'm fine, I said, noticing the exact moment when he realized the night court clothes I was wearing, the strip of bare skin exposed at my midriff. No one touched me. But he kept scouring my face, my neck. And then he rotated me, examining my back, as if he could discern through the clothes. I tore out of his grip.
I said no one touched me.
He was breathing hard, his eyes wild.
You're all right, he said.
And then said it again, and again.
My heart cracked, and I reached up to cup his cheek.
Tamlin, I murmured. Lucian and the other sentries wisely made their exit. My friend caught my gaze as he left, giving me a relieved smile.
He can harm you in other ways,
Tamlin croaked, closing his eyes against my touch.
I know, but I'm all right. I truly am, I said as gently as I could.
And then noticed the study walls, the claw marks raked down them, all over them. And the table they'd been using? That was new.
You trashed the study.
I trashed half the house, he said,
leaning forward to press his brow to mine.
He took you away. He stole you.
And left me alone.
Tamlin pulled back, growling.
Probably to get you to drop your guard. You have no idea what games he plays, what he's capable of doing.
I know, I said, even as it tasted like ash on my tongue. And the next time I'll be careful.
There won't be a next time.
I blinked.
You found a way out?
Or perhaps Ianthe had.
I'm not letting you go.
He said there were consequences for breaking a magical bargain.
Damn the consequences.
But I heard it for the empty threat it was, and how much it destroyed him. That was who he was, what he was, protector, defender. I couldn't ask him to stop being that way, to stop worrying about me. I rose onto my toes and kissed him. There was so much I wanted to ask him, but later. Let's go upstairs, I said onto his lips, and he slid his arms around me.
I missed you, he said between kisses. I went out of my mind.
That was all I needed to hear. Until...
I need to ask you some questions.
I let out a low sound of affirmation, but angled my head further. Later.
His body was so warm, so hard against mine, his scent so familiar.
Tamlin gripped my waist, pressing his brow to my own.
No. Now,
he said, but groaned softly as I slid my tongue against his teeth.
While,
he pulled back, ripping his mouth from mine,
while it's all fresh in your mind.
I froze, one hand tangled in his hair, the other gripping the back of his tunic. What? Tamlin stepped back, shaking his head as if to clear the desire addling his senses. We hadn't been apart for so long since Amarantha, and he wanted to press me for information about the Night Court? Tamlin? But he held up a hand, his eyes locked on mine as he called for Lucian. In the moments it took for his emissary to appear, I straightened my clothes, the top that had ridden up my torso, and finger-combed my hair. Tamlin just strode to his desk and plopped down, motioning for me to take a seat in front of it.
I'm sorry, he said quietly, as Lucian's strolling footsteps neared again. This is for our own good, our safety.
I took in the shredded walls, the scuffed and chipped furniture. What nightmares had he suffered, waking and asleep while I was away? What had it been like to imagine me in his enemy's hands after seeing what Amarantha had done to me? I know, I murmured at last. I know, Tamlin.
Or I was trying to know.
I'd just slid into the low-backed chair when Lucian strode in, shutting the door behind him.
Glad to see you in one piece, Vera, he said, claiming the seat beside me. I could do without the Night Court attire, though.
Tamlin gave a low growl of agreement. I said nothing. Yet I understood, I really did, why it'd be an affront to them. Tamlin and Lucian exchanged glances, speaking without uttering a word in that way only people who have been partners for centuries could do. Lucian gave a slight nod and leaned back in his chair, to listen, to observe.
We need you to tell us everything, Tamlin said. The layout of the Night Court, who you saw, what weapons and powers they bore, what Rhys did, who he spoke to, any and every detail you can recall.
I didn't realize I was a spy. Lucian shifted in his seat, but Tamlin said,
As much as I hate your bargain, you've been granted access into the Night Court. Outsiders rarely get to go in, and if they do, they rarely come out in one piece. And if they can function, their memories are usually scrambled. Whatever Rhys Sand is hiding in there, he doesn't want us to know about it.
A chill slithered down my spine. Why do you want to know? What are you going to do?
Knowing my enemy's plans, his lifestyle, is vital. As for what we're going to do, that's neither here nor there.
His green eyes pinned me.
Start with the layout of the court. Is it true it's under a mountain?
This feels an awful lot like an interrogation. Lucian sucked in a breath, but remained silent. Tamlin spread his hands on the desk,
We need to know these things, Farah. Or can you not remember? Claws glinted at his knuckles.
I can remember everything, I said. He didn't damage my mind. And before he could question me further, I began to speak of all that I had seen.
Because I trust you, Rhysand had said.
And maybe he had scrambled my mind, even with the lessons in shielding, because describing the layout of his home, his court, the mountains around them, felt like bathing in oil and mud. He was my enemy. He was holding me to a bargain I'd made from pure desperation. I kept talking, describing that tower room. Tamlin grilled me on the figures on the maps, making me turn over every word Rhysand had uttered, until I mentioned what had weighed on me the most this past week. The powers Rhys believed I now possessed, and Highburn's plans. I told him about that conversation with Moore, about that temple being sacked. Cesare, Tamlin explained, was a northern outpost in the Night Court and one of the few known towns. And Rhysand mentioning two people named Cassian and Azrael. Both of their faces had tightened at that, but they didn't mention if they knew them, or of them. So I told him about whatever the Illyrians were, and how Rhys had haunted down and killed the traitors amongst them. When I finished, Tamlin was silent, Lucian practically buzzing with whatever repressed words he was dying to spew. "Do you think I might have those abilities?" I said, willing myself to hold his gaze. "It's possible," Tamlin said with equal quiet. "And if it's true?" Lucian said at last, "It's a power other High Lords might kill for."
It was an effort not to fidget while his metal eye whirred, as if detecting whatever power ran through my blood.
"My father, for one, would not be pleased to learn a drop of his power is missing, or that Tamlin's bride now has it. He'd do anything to make sure you don't possess it, including kill you. There are other High Lords who would agree."
That thing beneath my skin began roiling. "I'd never use it against anyone."
"It's not about using it against them. It's about having an edge when you shouldn't," Tamlin said. "And the moment word gets out about it, you will have a target on your back."
"Did you know?" I demanded. Lucian wouldn't meet my eyes. "Did you suspect?"
"I'd hoped it wasn't true," Tamlin said carefully. "And now that Rhys suspects, there's no telling what he'll do with the information."
"He wants me to train."
I wasn't stupid enough to mention the mental shield training, not right now. "Training would draw too much attention," Tamlin said. "You don't need to train. I can guard you from whatever comes our way."
For there had been a time when he could not. When he had been vulnerable, and when he had watched me be tortured to death, and could do nothing to stop Amarantha from... I would not allow another Amarantha. I would not allow the King of Highburn to bring his beasts and minions to hurt more people, to hurt me and mine, and bring down that wall to hurt countless others across it.
I could use my powers against Highburn.
"That's out of the question," Tamlin said, "especially as there will be no war against Highburn."
"Rhys says war is inevitable and will be hit hard."
Lucian said dryly,
"And Rhys knows everything?"
"No, but he was concerned. He thinks I can make a difference in any upcoming conflict."
Tamlin flexed his fingers, keeping those claws contained.
"You have no training in battle or weaponry. And even if I started training you today, it'd be years before you could hold your own on an immortal battlefield."
He took a tight breath.
"So despite what he thinks you might be able to do, Feyre, I'm not going to have you anywhere near a battlefield. especially if it means revealing whatever powers you have to our enemies. You'd be fighting Hybern at your front and have foes with friendly faces at your back.
I don't care.
I care, Tamlin snarled. Lucian whooshed out a breath. I care if you die, if you're hurt, if you will be in danger every moment for the rest of our lives. So there will be no training, and we're going to keep this between us.
But Hybern,
Lucian intervened calmly.
I already have my sources looking into it.
I gave him a beseeching look. Lucian sighed a bit and said to Tamlin,
If we perhaps trained her in secret, too many risks, too many variables, Tamlin countered, and there will be no conflict with Hybern. No war. I snapped.
That's wishful thinking.
Lucian muttered something that sounded like a plea to the cauldron. Tamlin stiffened.
Describe his map room for me again, was his only response. End of discussion. No room for debate.
We stared each other down for a moment, and my stomach twisted further. He was the High Lord. My High Lord. He was the shield and defender of his people, of me. And if keeping me safe meant that his people could continue to hope, to build a new life, that he could do the same, I could bow to him on this one thing.
I could do it.
You are no one's subject.
Maybe Rhysand had altered my mind, shields or no. The thought alone was enough for me to begin feeding Tamlin details once more.
Chapter 8 A week later, the tithe arrived. I'd had all of one day with Tamlin, one day spent wandering the grounds, making love in the high grasses of a sunny field, and a quiet, private dinner, before he was called to the border. He didn't tell me why or where, only that I was to keep to the grounds and that I'd have sentries guarding me at all times. So I spent the week alone, waking in the middle of the night to hurl up my guts, to sob through the nightmares. Ianthe, if she'd learned of her sister's massacre in the north, said nothing about it in the few times I saw her. And given how little I liked to be pushed into talking about things that plagued me, I opted not to bring it up during the hours she spent visiting, helping select my clothes, my hair, my jewelry for the tithe. When I'd asked her to explain what to anticipate, she merrily said that Tamlin would take care of everything. I should watch from the side and observe. Easy enough. And perhaps a relief. To not be expected to speak or act. But it had been an effort not to look at the eye tattooed into my palm, to remember what Rhys had snarled at me. Tamlin had only returned the night before to oversee today's tithe. I tried not to take it personally, not when he had so much on his shoulders. Even if he wouldn't tell me much about it beyond what Ianthe had mentioned. Sitting beside Tamlin atop a dais in the manor's great hall of marble and gold, I endured the endless stream of eyes, of tears, of gratitude and blessings for what I'd done. In her usual pale blue hooded robe, Ianthe was stationed near the doors, offering benedictions to those that departed, comforting words to those who fell apart entirely in my presence, promises that the world was better now, that good had won out over evil. After 20 minutes, I was near fidgeting. After 4 hours, I stopped hearing entirely. They kept coming, the emissaries representing every town and people in the spring court, bearing their payments in the form of gold or jewels or chickens or crops or clothes. It didn't matter what it was, so long as it equated to what they owned. Lucian stood at the front of the dais, tallying every amount,
armed to the teeth like the 10 other sentries stationed through the hall. The receiving room, Lucian had called it, but it felt a hell of a lot like a throne room to me. I wondered if he'd called it that because the other words... I'd spent too much time in another throne room. So had Tamlin. And I hadn't been seated on a dais like him, but kneeling before it. Approaching it like the slender, gray-skinned fairy slinking from the front of the endless line full of lesser and high fae. She wore no clothes. Her long, dark hair hung limp over her high, firm breasts, and her massive eyes were wholly black, like a stagnant pond. And as she moved, the afternoon light shimmered on her iridescent skin. Lucian's face tightened with disapproval, but he made no comment as the lesser fairy lowered her delicate, pointed face and clasped her spindly, webbed fingers over her breasts.
"On behalf of the Water Wraiths, I greet thee, High Lord," she said, her voice strange and hissing, her full, sensuous lips revealing teeth as sharp and jagged as a pike's. The sharp angles of her face accentuated those coal-black eyes.
I'd seen her kind before, in the pond just past the edge of the manor. There were 5 of them who lived amongst the reeds and lily pads. I'd rarely glimpsed more than their shining heads peeking through the glassy surface. I'd never known how horrific they were up close. Thank the cauldron I'd never gone swimming in that pond. I had a feeling she'd grab me with those webbed fingers, those jagged nails digging in deep, and drag me beneath the surface before I could scream.
"Welcome," Tamlin said.
5 hours in, and he looked fresh as he'd been that morning. I suppose that with his powers returned, few things tired him now. The Water Wraith stepped closer, her webbed, clawed foot a mottled gray. Lucian took a casual step between us. That was why he'd been stationed on my side of the dais. I gritted my teeth. Who did they think would attack us in our own home, on our own land, if they weren't convinced Highburn might be launching an assault? Even Ianthe had paused her quiet murmurings in the back of the hall to monitor the encounter. Apparently, this conversation was not the same as all the others.
"Please, High Lord," the fairy was saying, bowing so low that her inky hair grazed the marble. "There are no fish left in the lake."
Tamlin's face was like granite.
"Regardless, you are expected to pay."
The crown atop his head gleamed in the afternoon light. Crafted with emeralds, sapphires, and amethyst, the gold had been modeled into a wreath of spring's first flowers, one of 5 crowns belonging to his bloodline. The fairy exposed her palms, but Tamlin interrupted her.
"There are no exceptions. You have 3 days to present what is owed, or offer double next tithe."
It was an effort to keep from gaping at the immovable face and the pitiless words. In the back, Ianthe gave a nod of confirmation to no one in particular. The Water Wraith had nothing to eat. How could he expect her to give him food?
"Please," she whispered through her pointed teeth, her silvery mottled skin glistening as she began trembling. "There is nothing left in the lake."
Tamlin's face didn't change.
"You have 3 days."
"But we have no gold."
"Do not interrupt me," he said.
I looked away, unable to stomach that merciless face. She ducked her head even lower.
"Apologies, my lord."
"You have 3 days to pay. Or bring double next month," he repeated. "If you fail to do so, you know the consequences."
Tamlin waved a hand in dismissal.
Conversation over.
After a final, hopeless look at Tamlin, she walked from the chamber.
As the next fairy, a goat-legged fawn bearing what looked to be a basket of mushrooms, patiently waited to be invited to approach the dais, I twisted to Tamlin.
"We don't need a basket of fish," I murmured. "Why make her suffer like that?"
He flicked his eyes to where Ianthe had stepped aside to let the creature pass, a hand on the jewels of her belt. As if the female would snatch them right off her to use as payment, Tamlin frowned.
"I cannot make exceptions. Once you do, everyone will demand the same treatment."
I clutched the arms of my chair, a small seat of oak beside his giant throne of carved roses.
"But we don't need these things. Why do we need a golden fleece or a jar of jam? If she has no fish left, 3 days won't make a difference. Why make her starve? Why not help her replenish the pond?"
I'd spent enough years with an aching belly to not be able to drop it, to want to scream at the unfairness of it. His emerald eyes softened as if he read each thought on my face, but he said,
"Because that's the way it is. That's the way my father did it, and his father, and the way my son shall do it."
He offered a smile and reached for my hand.
"Someday."
Someday. If we ever got married. If I ever became less of a burden, and we both escaped the shadows haunting us. We hadn't broached the subject at all. Ianthe, mercifully, had not said anything either.
"We could still help her. Find some way to keep that pond stocked."
"We have enough to deal with as it is. Giving handouts won't help her in the long run."
I opened my mouth, but shut it. Now wasn't the time for debate. So I pulled my hand from his as he motioned the goat-legged fawn to approach at last.
"I need some fresh air," I said, and slid from my chair. I didn't give Tamlin a chance to object before I stalked off the dais. I tried not to notice the 3 sentries Tamlin sent after me, or the line of emissaries who gaped and whispered as I crossed the hall. Ianthe tried to catch me as I stormed by, but I ignored her. I cleared the front doors and walked as fast as I dared past the gathering line snaking down the steps and onto the gravel of the main drive. Through the lattice work of various bodies, high fae and lesser fairies alike, I spotted the retreating form of the wraith heading around the corner of our house, toward the pond beyond the grounds. She trudged along, wiping at her eyes.
"Excuse me," I called, catching up to her, the sentries on my trail keeping a respectful distance behind.
She paused at the edge of the house, whirling with preternatural smoothness. I avoided the urge to take a step back as those unearthly features devoured me. Keeping only a few paces away, the guards monitored us with hands on their blades. Her nose was little more than 2 slits, and delicate gills flared beneath her ears. She inclined her head slightly, not a full bow, because I was no one, but recognition that I was the High Lord's plaything.
"Yes," she hissed, her pike's teeth gleaming.
"How much is your tithe?"
My heart beat faster as I beheld the webbed fingers and razor-sharp teeth. Tamlin had once told me that water wraiths ate anything, and if there were no fish left.
"How much gold does he want? What is your fish worth in gold?"
"Far more than you have in your pocket."
"Then here," I said, unfastening a ruby-studded gold bracelet from my wrist, one Ianthe had told me better suited my coloring than the silver I'd almost worn. I offered it to her.
"Take this.
Before she could grasp it, I ripped the gold necklace from my throat and the diamond teardrops from my ears.
And these. I extended my hands, glittering with gold and jewels. Give him what you owe, then buy yourself some food, I said, swallowing as her eyes widened. The nearby village had a small market every week, a fledgling gathering of vendors for now, and one I'd hoped to help thrive. Somehow.
And what payment do you require?
Nothing. It's not a bargain. Just take it. I extended my hands further. Please.
She frowned at the jewels draping from my hands.
You desire nothing in return.
Nothing. The fairies in the line were now staring unabashedly.
Please, just take them.
With a final assessing look, her cold, clammy fingers brushed mine, gathering up the jewelry. It glimmered like light on water in her webbed hands.
Thank you,
she said, and bowed deeply this time.
I will not forget this kindness.
Her voice slithered over the words, and I shivered again as her black eyes threatened to swallow me whole.
Nor will any of my sisters.
She stalked back toward the manor, the faces of my three sentries tight with reproach. I sat at the dinner table with Lucian and Tamlin. Neither of them spoke, but Lucian's gaze kept bouncing from me to Tamlin, then to his plate. After 10 minutes of silence, I set down my fork and said to Tamlin, "What is it?" Tamlin didn't hesitate.
"You know what it is."
I didn't reply.
"You gave that water wraith your jewelry. Jewelry I gave you."
"We have a damn house full of golden jewels." Lucian took a deep breath that sounded a lot like, "Here we go."
"Why shouldn't I give them to her?" I demanded. "Those things don't mean anything to me. I've never worn the same piece of jewelry twice. Who cares about any of it?"
Tamlin's lips thinned.
"Because you undermine the laws of this court when you behave like that. Because this is how things are done here. And when you hand that gluttonous fairy the money she needs, it makes this entire court look weak."
"Don't you talk to me like that," I said, baring my teeth. He slammed his hand on the table, claws poking through his flesh, but I leaned forward, bracing my own hands on the wood.
"You still have no idea what it was like for me, to be on the verge of starvation for months at a time. And you can call her a glutton all you like, but I have sisters too, and I remember what it felt like to return home without any food."
I calmed my heaving chest, and that force beneath my skin stirred, undulating along my bones.
"So maybe she'll spend all that money on stupid things. Maybe she and her sisters have no self-control. But I'm not going to take that chance and let them starve because of some ridiculous rule that your ancestors invented."
Lucian cleared his throat.
"She meant no harm, Tam." "I know she meant no harm," he snapped.
Lucian held his gaze.
"Worse things have happened. Worse things can happen. Just relax."
Tamlin's emerald eyes were feral as he snarled at Lucian.
"Did I ask for your opinion?"
Those words, the look he gave Lucian, and the way Lucian lowered his head, my temper was a burning river in my veins.
"Look up," I silently beseeched him.
"Push back. He's wrong and we're right." Lucian's jaw tightened. That force thrummed in me again, seeping out, spearing for Lucian.
"Do not back down."
Then I was gone. Still there, still seeing through my eyes, but also half looking through another angle in the room. another person's vantage point.
Thoughts slammed into me, images and memories, a pattern of thinking and feeling that was old and clever and sad, so endlessly sad and guilt-ridden, hopeless.
Then I was back, blinking,
no more than a heartbeat passing as I gaped at Lucian. His head. I had been inside his head, had slid through his mental walls.
I stood, chucking my napkin on the table with hands that were unnervingly steady. I knew who that gift had come from. My dinner rose in my throat, but I willed it down.
"We're not finished with this meal," Tamlin growled.
"Oh, get over yourself," I barked,
and left. I could have sworn I beheld two burned handprints on the wood, peeking out from beneath my napkin. I prayed neither of them would notice. And that Lucian remained ignorant of the violation I'd just committed.
Chapter 9.
I paced my room for a good while. Maybe I'd been mistaken when I'd spotted those burns. Maybe they'd been there before. Maybe I hadn't somehow summoned heat and branded the wood.
Maybe I hadn't slid into Lucian's mind as if I were moving from one room to another.
Just as she always did, Alice appeared to help me change for bed. As I sat before the vanity, letting her comb my hair, I cringed at my reflection. The purple beneath my eyes seemed permanent now, my face wan. Even my lips were a bit pale, and I sighed as I closed my eyes.
"You gave your jewels to a water wraith," Alice mused, and I found her reflection in the mirror. Her brown skin looked like crushed leather, and her dark eyes gleamed for a moment before she focused on my hair.
"They're a slippery sort."
"She said they were starving, that they had no food," I murmured. Alice gently coaxed out a tangle. "Not one fairy in that line today would have given her the money. No one would have dared. Too many have gone to a watery grave because of their hunger, insatiable appetite. It is their curse. Your jewels won't last her a week." I tapped a foot on the floor. "But," Alice went on, setting down the brush to braid my hair into a single plait. Her long, spindly fingers scratched against my scalp. "She will never forget it. So long as she lives, no matter what you said, she is in your debt." Alice finished the braid and patted my shoulder. "Too many fairies have tasted hunger these past 50 years. Don't think word of this won't spread." I was afraid of that, perhaps, more than anything. It was after midnight when I gave up waiting, walked down the dark, silent corridors, and found him in his study, alone for once. A wooden box wrapped with a fat pink bow sat on the small table between the twin armchairs.
"I was just about to come up," he said,
lifting his head to do a quick scan over my body to make sure all was right, all was fine.
"You should be asleep."
I shut the door behind me. I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep, not with the words we'd shouted ringing in my ears.
"So should you," I said,
my voice as tenuous as the peace between us.
"You work too hard."
I crossed the room to lean against the armchair, eyeing the present as Tamlin had eyed me.
"Why do you think I had such little interest in being High Lord?" he said,
rising from his seat to round the desk. He kissed my brow, the tip of my nose, my mouth.
"So much paperwork," he grumbled onto my lips.
I chuckled, but he pressed his mouth to the bare spot between my neck and shoulder.
"I'm sorry," he murmured,
and my spine tingled. He kissed my neck again.
I'm sorry.
I ran a hand down his arm. Tamlin, I started.
I shouldn't have said those things, he breathed onto my skin. To you or Lucian, I didn't mean any of them.
I know, I said, and his body relaxed against mine. I'm sorry I snapped at you.
You had every right, he said,
though I technically didn't.
I was wrong.
What he said had been true. If he made exceptions, then other fairies would demand the same treatment. And what I had done could be construed as undermining. Maybe I was—
No. You were right. I don't understand what it's like to be starving, or any of it.
I pulled back a bit to incline my head toward the present waiting there, more than willing to let this be the last of it. I gave a small, wry smile. For you? He nipped at my ear in answer.
For you. From me.
An apology. Feeling lighter than I had in days, I tugged the ribbon loose and examined the pale wood box beneath. It was perhaps 2 feet high and 3 feet wide, a solid iron handle anchored in the top. No crest or lettering to indicate what might be within. Certainly not a dress, but...
Please, not a crown.
Though surely a crown or diadem would be in something less rudimentary.
I unlatched the small brass lock and flipped open the broad lid.
It was worse than a crown, actually. Built into the box were compartments and shelves and holders, all full of brushes and paints and charcoal and sheets of paper. A traveling painting kit.
Red.
The red paint inside the glass vial was so bright, the blue as stunning as the eyes of that fairy woman I'd slaughtered.
I thought you might want to take it around the grounds with you, rather than lug all those bags like you always do.
The brushes were fresh, gleaming, the bristles soft and clean. Looking at that box, at what was inside, felt like examining a crow-picked corpse. I tried to smile, tried to will some brightness to my eyes. He said,
"You don't like it."
No, I managed to say. No, it's wonderful. And it was. It really was.
I thought if you started painting again...
I waited for him to finish. He didn't.
My face heated.
And what about you? I asked quietly. Will the paperwork help with anything at all? I dared meet his eyes. Temper flared in them. But he said,
"We're not talking about me, we're talking about you."
I studied the box and its contents again. Will I even be allowed to roam where I wish to paint, or will there be an escort, too? Silence. A no, and a yes, then. I began shaking. But for me, for us, I made myself say, Tamlin, I can't live my life with guards around me day and night. I can't live with that suffocation. Just let me help you. Let me work with you.
You've given enough, Feyre.
I know, but... I faced him, met his stare. The full power of the High Lord of the Spring Court. I'm harder to kill now. I'm faster, stronger.
My family was faster and stronger than you, and they were murdered quite easily.
Then marry someone who can put up with this.
He blinked, slowly. Then he said with terrible softness,
"Do you not want to marry me then?"
I tried not to look at the ring on my finger, at that emerald.
Of course I do. Of course I do.
My voice broke.
But you... Tamlin!
The walls pushed in on me. The quiet, the guards, the stairs, what I'd seen at the tithe today.
I'm drowning,
I managed to say.
I am drowning. And the more you do this, the more guards. You might as well be shoving my head under the water.
Nothing in those eyes, that face. But then, I cried out, instinct taking over as his power blasted through the room. The windows shattered, the furniture splintered, and that box of paints and brushes and paper, it exploded into dust and glass and wood.
Chapter 10. One breath, the study was intact. The next, it was shards of nothing, a shell of a room. None of it had touched me from where I had dropped to the floor, my hands over my head. Tamlin was panting, the ragged breaths almost like sobs. I was shaking, shaking so hard I thought my bones would splinter as the furniture had, but I made myself lower my arms and look at him. There was devastation on his face, and pain, and fear, and grief. Around me, no debris had fallen, as if he had shielded me. Tamlin took a step toward me, over that invisible demarcation. He recoiled as if he'd hit something solid.
Thera,
he rasped. He stepped again, and that line held.
Thera, please,
he breathed. And I realized that the line, that bubble of protection, it was from me. A shield. Not just a mental one, but a physical one, too. I didn't know what High Lord it had come from, who controlled air or wind or any of that. Perhaps one of the solar courts. I didn't care.
Thera,
Tamlin groaned a third time, pushing a hand against what indeed looked like an invisible, curved wall of hardened air.
Please. Please.
Those words cracked something in me, cracked me open. Perhaps they cracked that shield of solid wind as well, for his hand shot through it. Then he stepped over that line between chaos and order, danger and safety. He dropped to his knees, taking my face in his hands.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I couldn't stop trembling.
I'll try, he breathed. I'll try to be better. I can't control it sometimes, the rage. Today was bad. With the tithe, with all of it. Today, let's forget it. Let's just move past it, please.
I didn't fight as he slid his arms around me, tucking me in tightly enough that his warmth soaked through me. He buried his face in my neck and said onto my nape, as if the words would be absorbed by my body, as if he could only say it the way we'd always been good at communicating, skin to skin.
I couldn't save you before. I couldn't protect you from them. And when you said that about me drowning you, am I any better than they were?
I should have told him it wasn't true, but I had spoken with my heart, or what was left of it.
I'll try to be better, he said again. Please, give me more time. Let me get through this, please.
Get through what? I wanted to ask. But words had abandoned me. I realized I hadn't spoken yet. Realized he was waiting for an answer, and that I didn't have one. So I put my arms around him, because body to body was the only way I could speak, too. It was answer enough.
I'm sorry,
he said again. He didn't stop murmuring it for minutes.
You've given enough, Feyre.
Perhaps he was right, and perhaps I didn't have anything left to give anyway.
I looked over his shoulder as I held him. The red paint had splattered on the wall behind us. As I watched it slide down the cracked wood paneling, I thought it looked like blood.
Tamlin didn't stop apologizing for days. He made love to me morning and night. He worshipped my body with his hands, his tongue, his teeth. But that had never been the hard part. We just got tripped up with the rest. But he was good for his word. There were fewer guards as I walked the grounds. Some remained, but no one haunted my steps. I even went on a ride through the wood without an escort. Though I knew the stable hands had reported to Tamlin the moment I'd left and returned. Tamlin never mentioned the shield of solid wind I'd used against him, and things were good enough that I didn't dare bring it up either. The days passed in a blur. Tamlin was away more often than not, and whenever he returned he didn't tell me anything. I'd long since stopped pestering him for answers. A protector. That's who he was and would always be. What I had wanted when I was cold and hard and joyless, what I had needed to melt the ice of bitter years on the cusp of starvation. I didn't have the nerve to wonder what I wanted or needed now, who I had become. So with idleness my only option, I spent my days in the library, practicing my reading and writing, adding to that mental shield brick by brick, layer by layer. Sometimes seeing if I could summon that physical wall of solid air, too, savoring the silence, even as it crept into my veins, my head. Some days I didn't speak to anyone at all, even Alice. I awoke each night, shaking and panting, and became glad when Tamlin wasn't there to witness it, when I, too, didn't witness him being yanked from his dreams, cold sweat coating his body. Or shifting into that beast and staying awake until dawn, monitoring the estate for threats. What could I say to calm those fears when I was the source of so many of them? But he returned for an extended stay about 2 weeks after the tithe, and I'd decided to try to talk, to interact. I owed it to him to try, owed it to myself. He seemed to have the same idea, and for the first time in a while, things felt normal, or as normal as they could be. I awoke one morning to the sound of low, deep voices in the hallway outside my bedroom. Closing my eyes, I nestled into the pillow and pulled the blankets higher. Despite our morning roll in the sheets, I'd been rising later every day, sometimes not bothering to get out of bed until lunch. A growl cut through the walls, and I opened my eyes again.
"Get out," Tamlin warned.
There was a quiet response, too soft for me to make out beyond basic mumbling.
"I'll say it one last time."
He was interrupted by that voice, and the hair on my arms rose. I studied the tattoo on my forearm as I did a tally. No. No. Today couldn't have come so quickly. Kicking back the covers, I rushed to the door, realizing halfway that I was naked. Thanks to Tamlin, my clothes had been shredded and flung across to the other side of the room, and I had no robe in sight. I grabbed a blanket from a nearby chair and wrapped it around me before opening the door a crack. Sure enough, Tamlin and Rhysand stood in the hallway. Upon hearing the door open, Rhys turned toward me. The grin that had been on his face faltered.
"Feyre."
Rhys's eyes lingered, taking in every detail.
"Are you running low on food here?"
What? Tamlin demanded.
Those violet eyes had gone cold. Rhys extended a hand toward me.
Let's go.
Tamlin was in Rhysand's face in an instant, and I flinched.
Get out!
He pointed toward the staircase.
She'll come to you when she's ready.
Rhysand just brushed an invisible fleck of dust off Tamlin's sleeve. Part of me admired the sheer nerve it must have taken. Had Tamlin's teeth been inches from my throat, I would have bleated in panic.
Rhys cut a glance at me.
No, you wouldn't have. As far as your memory serves me, the last time Tamlin's teeth were near your throat, you slapped him across the face.
I snapped up my forgotten shields, scowling. Shut your mouth, Tamlin said, stepping further between us, and get out!
The High Lord conceded a step toward the stairs and slid his hands into his pockets.
You really should have your wards inspected. Cauldron knows what other sort of riffraff might stroll in here as easily as I did.
Again, Rhys assessed me, his gaze hard.
Put some clothes on.
I bared my teeth at him as I stepped back into my room. Tamlin followed after me, slamming the door hard enough that the chandeliers shuddered, sending shards of light shivering over the walls. I dropped the blanket and strode for the armoire across the room, the mattress groaning behind me as Tamlin sank onto the bed.
How did he get in here? I asked, throwing open the doors and rifling through the clothes until I found the turquoise night court attire I'd asked Alice to keep.
I knew she'd wanted to burn them, but I told her I'd wind up coming home with another set anyway.
I don't know, Tamlin said.
I slipped on my pants, twisting to find him running a hand through his hair. I felt the lie beneath his words.
He just... It's part of whatever game he's playing.
I tugged the short shirt over my head. If war is coming, maybe we'd be better served trying to mend things.
We hadn't spoken of that subject since my first day back. I dug through the bottom of the armoire for the matching silk shoes and turned to him as I slid them on.
I'll start mending things the day he releases you from your bargain.
Maybe he's keeping the bargain so that you'll attempt to listen to him.
I strode to where he sat on the bed, my pants a bit looser around the waist than last month.
Feyre, he said, reaching for me, but I stepped out of range.
Why do you need to know these things? Is it not enough for you to recover in peace? You earned that for yourself. You earned it. I relaxed the number of sentries here. I've been trying to be better about it. So leave the rest of it.
He took a steadying breath.
This isn't the time for this conversation.
It was never the time for this conversation or that conversation. But I didn't say it. I didn't have the energy to say it, and all the words dried up and blew away. So I memorized the lines of Tamlin's face and didn't fight him as he pulled me to his chest and held me tightly.
Someone coughed from the hall, and Tamlin's body seized up around me. But I'd had enough fighting and snarling and going back to that open, serene place atop that mountain. It seemed better than hiding in the library. I pulled away, and Tamlin lingered as I walked back into the hall.
Rhys frowned at me.
I debated barking something nasty at him, but it would have required more fire than I had, and would have required caring what he thought.
Rhys's face became unreadable as he extended a hand.
Only for Tamlin to appear behind me and shove that hand down.
You end her bargain right here, right now, and I'll give you anything you want. Anything.
My heart stopped dead.
Are you out of your mind?
Tamlin didn't so much as blink in my direction. Rhysand merely raised